Only the essentials.
Just the essentials.
I only brought the essentials.
I never leave home without all the essentials.
You're listening to Pop Culture Essentials, your guide to the latest movies.
What is your third favorite movie of all time?
Games. TV.
TV.
And you know what else?
Streaming.
Christy, wake up!
In pop culture news.
Pop culture and current events.
So sit back, relax,
and let your host, Alistar, Nick, and Pete take you through this week's Pop Culture Essentials.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Essentials. I am your host, Alistar. Here with me today is a voice you might remember, Nick Lavaro.
It's an easy voice to remember. It's an easy voice to be annoyed at, but it's a pleasure to be back on the show talking all things Teal Beetle today.
The gent that gave us that idea is our movie writer, Pat. Welcome in.
G'day, g'day. How are we all?
Good. How are you?
Well, mate.
Oh, fantastic, mate. Happy to have enjoyed a DC movie for a change.
Well, we will get to that very shortly. I'm just going to start off by saying we do, by the time this goes up, our Blue Beetle competition will be closed. So sorry, you should really follow us on your socials and enter competitions, because we have a whole lot more coming. We've currently got a few double passes for Retribution to give away, Liam Neeson's new one, and a couple of DVDs for The Butcher, a new horror movie. And if you are a horror movie fan, it is the start of horror movie season. We will be celebrating by giving away tickets to the brand new Exorcist film. We have 20 double passes to give away. That's right, 20. So make sure you jump on our socials, NovaStream AU. Give us a follow. Look out for that comp. You can double entry by entering on the website and socials as well. Lots going on.
Heaps. Always good. Always good to have a fair few giveaways going on. It's nice to have movies out, not all of them getting pushed back as well. So definitely competition's worth entering.
Yes. And spooky season's the best part of the year.
Oh, yes. October, baby.
Bring it on. Now, look, before we get talking about the movie, I did also want to say Nick got to interview the director of this film.
Yes, Angel Manuel Soto, who was incredibly kind, incredibly passionate about the project, and he was really fun to talk to. And we spoke about sort of, I guess we will talk about it more in our reviews as well, but, you know, creating the culture around Blue Beetle, especially the Latino culture as well. And, yeah, fun interview. So that's video and written. So you can go to NovaStreamNetwork.com for the interview, or to go to the NovaStream YouTube page. You can watch my chat with Angel Manuel Soto.
All right, so as we said before, Blue Beetle is the latest film in the DC universe, I think we're allowed to call this one.
Yeah.
So it's not officially part of James Gunn's reboot. However, James Gunn has come out and said that Blue Beetle will feature in the new DC universe, and it will be played by the same actor. And after watching the movie, hopefully all of the family stick around, because if it wasn't for them, we'd be looking at another generic superhero movie. Fortunately, in my opinion, that was all avoided, but we will jump into opinions very soon. The basic rundown is Jaime Reyes returns home full of aspirations from the future from college, only to find that home is not exactly as he left. He starts searching for purpose in his world, trying to find a job, when fate intervenes, when he unexpectedly finds himself in possession of an ancient relic of alien biotech, the Scarab. So let's start off, Pat. What did you think of this movie? Initial thoughts?
Initial thoughts. I went in with very low expectations. A few of the superhero movies of late have been, you know, mid at best. So went in just to try and enjoy myself and have a bit of fun. But straight off the bat, you sort of work out that it is a little bit different. It's got that very sort of family focus. And, you know, especially probably for us in Australia too, seeing that Latino interaction from from family members and how their family structure is somewhat different to our own, it was a good side of it to actually add on to the characters themselves, to the main superhero part of it. You know, it was a good balance. It brought balance out with it all.
Yeah, definitely. Nick, what did you think?
I enjoyed this movie. I definitely probably am in record this year in saying that I'm feeling a little bit of the superhero fatigue at the moment. Whether that is a real thing or I'm just over below average films, that's probably another conversation. But I think the movie starts off with so much energy, and I think a lot of that energy is Sholem Aradwana, who plays Jaime. He is unreal in this movie. It's like a star-making performance for him, and I think he carries a lot of the film in his shoulders, and Angel Manuel Soto's direction adds that energy a lot. Like Pat was saying, the Latino culture is a big part of the film too, where a lot of, you know, I think I came into it very curious about, you know, not having seen a lot of that culture, as being in Australia, but also even on screen before. Probably about the halfway point when it starts getting into its more generic superhero plot, it lost me a little bit. We'll break it down a little bit more, but I have a lot of problems with the villain/villains in this movie. And it just sort of lost me as it became a bit of a CW plot. Don't attack me, CW fans. But when I'm watching something on the big screen, I kind of want it to feel like it's on the big screen. And if I wanted to watch CW, I'd buy the DVD version of The Flash. So like, that's kind of where I sat. I think it started strong and it lost me towards the end, but I'm excited to see what else Blue Beetle and even Angel Manuel Soto can bring potentially to the DCU moving forward. What about you, Alistair? What do you think?
So, well, first of all, I'm going to rebut one of your points, just so everyone knows.
Please do, please do.
Not aware, this movie was actually filmed for TV.
Yes, so it was initially for HBO Max, right?
HBO Max. It was meant to go straight to Max, and then the new CEO Zazie came in. And said,
Papa Zazie.
No, let's put it on the big screen and try and make some money.
Yes.
So that's why the whole time, anytime I was like, oh, that looks terrible, I'm like, I'm meant to be watching this at home on my TV.
Yeah.
It gets a pass.
Because it doesn't have
the same budget and the same access as, big blockbuster DC films get.
It had a $104 million budget.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. Included. Oh, true.
So a lot of it was marketing. For me, like, I was admittedly exhausted when I saw this. I had a very long day at work. Mm-hmm. And I'd watched a lot of movies already. So I was not really in the right headspace to watch this film. And I was very aware of that as it started. However, the more that the days have passed and I'm still thinking about it, the more I actually really, really did enjoy it. A lot of people are comparing it to Shazam 2 Fury of the Gods, but a much better version.
That's more. I was like, don't bring Shazam up to this movie's level.
So for me, like, this is a little bit different for me. So I don't know about you guys, but I grew up loving Ugly Betty. So a lot, right. I've had a 5-year relationship with a show centered around a Mexican family. So just seeing those same traditions and food and the family being in everyone's business and there's no way out of it. Just seeing that in a superhero setting was just refreshing.
Mm. The family dynamic's unreal in this movie. Like, and it provides a healthy amount of like the comedy, especially early on. Like, I think it's a shot in the trailer though, is like when Jaime goes for his interview at court and then everyone's in the truck cheering him on and he's like, yep. I don't know who they are. Like, you know, it's this real great comedy, but then especially with events that happen later in the film and a pretty significant event in Jaime's life, it's the heart. Like, it's really the core of the heart of this film is the relationships. I love the relationship between Jaime and his sister as well. And I feel like it's the first time from memory that we've got like a early to mid 20s superhero who's like just come out of college. Like it's such a weird thing to like gravitate to, but I just really enjoyed the scene where he's like on the roof talking to his sister, having a beer. You know what I mean? You can't have Spider-Man doing that. He's a teenager, but it's kind of nice to have like, I don't know, maybe that's just me, but yeah, I think the family dynamic and the age that Blue Beetle's at is something we don't see a lot of in superhero movies. And actually,
No, I was just going to say, it brings a level of normality to it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like right?
It's just the guy over the road's having a beer on the roof with his sister.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think
it was really evident in the third act of the film when usually the superhero goes off to fight the villain on his own.
Yes.
And this time the whole family come along for the ride and kind of break off into different groups and actually have to rescue him with tech and no superpowers. And that, for me, delivered that difference and that edge that we don't really get in superhero movies, while, you know, drumming home the importance of the family unit. And how much these, you know, this family doesn't have.
Yeah.
And the lengths they'll go to protect their own. And I think that was just such a strong message that we don't really see in superhero movies, because we see parents die, which, spoiler alert, does happen in this.
Yeah.
And I was shocked, and a lot of people in the cinema were audibly shocked.
That was a bit of a punch moment, wasn't it?
Die.
After such a massive scene too, it's because it's like one of those, it's like such a cool action scene. It's Jaime kind of getting to know the suit a bit better, has to protect his family, and then ultimately does protect his family, but still has someone taken away from him. Like, you know what I mean? And it's not that it's out of the blue, because the family member who does die, you know, has a medical condition and stuff, but it's no less ripping the heart out of the chest. You know what I mean? Just to plug the interview with Angel again, I asked him about the family dynamic in the film, and he said that was something really important to him, because so many superheroes have lonely journeys and they don't tell their family about their identity because of the dangerous implications of it. But he's like, Latino culture is, the family is so intertwined with each other. You can't, he's like, good luck keeping any secrets from them. And then Jaime's first transformation into Blue Beetle happens right in front of his family in this like terrifically, darkly funny body horror scene, which I thought was fantastic. So it's not, it generally reminded me of like a Cronenberg movie, like when all the like the blue goo's like going into his mouth and his face, and I was like, this is kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
But I loved it. But again, it just hammers down on the fact that like the Blue Beetle is actually not nothing, but he is definitely he's less superior or whatever. He's inferior without his family, which is awesome.
I think, like, I don't know if you've watched the TV show, the cartoons, or read the comics. So he's heavily in Batman, the Brave and the Bold, and Young Justice. And has had a really strong comic book arc in the last few years. And I guess
he's been everywhere lately.
Yeah, very, very, very jokey when he comes into his own. Very much on, like, you know, the Deadpool, not as dirty, but like the Deadpool style of character, where they're very like light and jokey.
Yeah.
And everything's fun.
He's a 23-year-old smartass.
Yeah, essentially.
It's the best way of putting it, yeah.
And look, the cartoons did such a fantastic job of setting the character up. And I think they definitely were able to portray that in the movie as well. I really liked that the voice of the Scarab was female, which was a choice that I wasn't expecting. And it didn't really focus on that relationship too much. It kept it on the family. It could have easily just gone into that Venom territory. And I was really, really impressed that they didn't do that.
Yeah, I agree as well. And I'm just, because when you brought it up, I forgot the voice of the Scarab. It's Becky G.
Becky G.
Yeah, I forgot that. So, yeah.
She was the yellow Power Ranger.
Was she?
In the recent Power Rangers movie, yeah.
In the movie, yeah. I was like, where do I know her from? Underrated movie.
Interesting.
Fucking very underrated movie.
Interesting. With Elizabeth Banks?
Yes.
The only scene I remember from that movie is, apart from the hot guy who kept taking his shirt off, is in the final battle. I think she destroys a Krispy Kreme donut place. And the next scene is is her walking down the road eating a donut. And I just love that detail so much. It's the only thing I remember
from that movie. Underrated movie.
So in relation to where this fits into the DC universe, so obviously The Flash was meant to be the last connected movie of the old hat of DC.
So, because Gunn said this Flash was like supposed to reset everything technically, right? Is that
so? It's now all he can do whatever he wants.
No expectation
of who's in movies, apart from George Clooney as Batman, because you set that up. Spoiler alert if you haven't seen it. But yeah, this is essentially the first character that we're getting in James Gunn's universe, followed by Creature Commandos on HBO Max, and then Superman Legacy, maybe not next year now.
Yeah, I don't see many of the big big tentpole movies that were supposed to be filming or in pre-production now coming out next year anymore. So
definitely not.
Bit of time to refine whatever they need to refine so that at least they don't rush them out, which would be nice.
We did touch on the villain before, and I do want to go back to it because a lot of comparisons to Iron Man have been made simply because of the tech, even when... What's his... I keep calling him Parallax. I don't know if any of you saw Green Lantern.
Conrad Karapax.
I kept calling him Parallax. When he grabbed that, like, neon whip, I was like, this is just like out of Iron Man 2.
Yeah, he's Mickey Rourke, Whiplash, right? Yeah.
And look, he does... You know, there is a lot of tech involved in the Blue Beetle world, and this does kind of get introduced... In the last act, when it comes to his family helping him.
Right. Yep.
What did you guys think, Pat, did you think about Iron Man at all during this in relation to the villain? Or
With the villain, there were some similarities with Karapax, like with Iron Man and Karapax, just with the way that the suit, well, more the way it looks more than anything.
Yeah.
But being that... It was sort of set very early on how this was a biomechanical type thing that was actually, you know, something within your body that was then using, I'm assuming, nanobots or something that are, you know, being able to make the suit and give you strength and all that, which, again, is very similar to Iron Man. But I think there's enough difference there with the whole Scarab lore as well that sort of brings a bit into it. So, I didn't really click for me, but I can see what you're talking about, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Nick, what did you think?
Yeah, I'm similar to Pat. Like, it clicks me as, like, a Spider-Man, Iron Man hybrid, right? Just in regards to the Scarab and the tech of the film. I think I still, to me at least, there's so many comparisons you can make between DC, Marvel, any form of superhero. Like even if we're going to bring the boys into this, I feel like there's only such a ceiling you can put on what people's powers are, how they get them, and things like that. So yeah, that's kind of how I feel about the Scarab. In regards to the villain, I thought they were, my biggest issue is that they were super undercooked. So Karapax was interesting to me in the sense of we don't even find out his motivation to be a villain until the last 15 minutes of the movie. Find out what Victoria Cord, who's played by Susan Sarandon, the reason she brought him in to, you know, to be the one-man army corps, right? Until, like, we're already well deep into the final battle of the film. So he was already a character for the whole movie that I didn't connect to, and I have no previous knowledge of anything Blue Beetle, so for me coming in pretty blind, I was like, what's the point of this guy except for being, like, you know, unimportant villain man number three? So then my issue with the villains gravitates towards Susan Sarandon, who I think based on reviews I've read and people I've spoken to, I'm the only one who thinks this. So I thought she was severely miscast in this movie. I feel like she...
I'm with you there.
Right, yeah. I just feel like she didn't know what movie she was in. And it, to me, I love Susan Sarandon, don't get me wrong. I think she's a brilliant actress. But I just saw Susan Sarandon on screen the whole time, just someone reading the lines, being generic villain who wants to create an army. Like, I didn't really understand her her motives and you know. She, I mean, like, I'm literally reading it here now. She's like, she's driven by a need to be ambitious and prove herself. That's, I mean, you can do that without being evil. You can do that also to be good. So, yeah, to me, I just think it's an undercooked villain that, unfortunately, I think Susan Sarandon just didn't have enough to grab onto.
I think she definitely was in a straight-to-TV movie and was there for the paycheck.
Oh, God, yeah.
Even when in the final scene where she's being dragged into the fire, she didn't even seem that
scared.
Scared. And that's something that everyone I was with commented on and laughed wholeheartedly, going, thank God we never have to see her again.
I'll never say never. Wait till they reintroduce the multiverse in the DCU.
I thought her as a, like, her character, I think, had way too much going on. She had this, you know, issue with her family legacy, with the court legacy, that she was trying to push past. But on the other side as well, she was already a, you know, tech mogul, well respected within the world, but was still angry about what her dad did, and you know, her brother being sort of a bit of a flake but still got the company, and then disappeared, and you know, there's all these things rolling into it. And unfortunately, again, big fan of Susan Sarandon, but she didn't have that malice that I think you kind of need for that sort of role, because there's obviously malice there if you're still holding on to these problems that you've essentially fixed over the past 20 years.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, you just there's no, I don't know. She didn't inspire fear or anything like that. It was kind of left up to Carapax, and yeah, that was not real well fleshed out anyway.
No, I agree. And I think that just brings, especially when there's such a large focus on them in the second half of the movie, because, you know, that I would even argue that first encounter between Carapax and Blue Beetle, where they're like in the outside court industries and stuff, was kind of like an underwhelming fight, because I didn't understand the stakes. And that's not to say, like, oh, every fight scene or action scene in a movie needs to have stakes behind it to be good, because, you know, you can also just have great action. But again, that sort of television style feel, which, you know, I'm back and forth on it with Alistair's point of view on it. Like, I totally understand it was made for HBO Max. But I think also watching it on the big screen gives it a bit of a, you do desire more out of it, but not understanding the point, like, and it's kind of weird, because, like, Blue Beetle, I feel like in that scene as well, Jaime is kind of like, why is this guy after me? Like, this is like, I'm not doing anything. He's trying to explain, like, I've just run into the Scarab guys. Like, I have nothing wrong here, but still this one man army corps is like, nah, man, I'm death and destruction's all I know. So yeah, it's just a little bit wonky and a little bit all over the place. And then, yeah, it doesn't help that, you know, Susan Sarandon was as confused as I was. As well, like, even though that opening scene where they find the Scarab in, like, Antarctica or wherever the fuck they find it, like, to me, didn't start the movie on a great foot. I was like, all right, here we go. And I'm glad that they focused a big portion of that, of the film's energy on Jaime and his family. But yeah, it that's just like the weaker aspect, and it's so noticeable that it does bring the film down a little bit for me overall.
Things that didn't bring the film down was seeing Harvey Gillen as Dr. Sanchez in only a couple of scenes, but they were still, just seeing him just made it so much better.
He's great. He's such a funny actor. Like, I do love him very much, yeah.
He was just, not in a big role, but enough to make an impact.
Another shameless plug. He is incredibly sweet, and I interviewed him for Nova Stream as well for Puss in Boots: The Last Wish. last year. So if you do want to go check out that interview, you can go do that as well. But he's so funny in the movie as well, which is so, but also because you bring up a point, he plays Dr. Sanchez, who I then was led to believe has some sort of significance in the DCU or just in DC in general. Am I wrong about that?
No, I think we could talk about this for a lot longer, but I am going to go to final thoughts. This time we'll start with Nick. Final thoughts, and score out of 5.
Overall, I am more excited about what's to come with the character of Blue Beetle and the character of Jaime Reyes in the DCU, because I generally think this movie is a vehicle for Sholem Aradwena. He is so charismatic, he's charming, he's funny. And he kicks ass in the action scenes, and that is so predominant early in the film. The film had me hooked. The villains definitely ruined it. Like I said, I think everything's a little bit undercooked in regards to the villain. I do still feel that there is kind of the lower stakes of the overall story, and that made-for-TV sort of feel doesn't necessarily portray the cinematic experience you want in a DC or a superhero movie in the cinemas in general. But it left a decent enough taste in my mouth that I'm excited to see what is to come in this new iteration of DCU, as long as we get more Sholem Aradwena in there as well. And in saying that, more Angel Manuel Soto as well. I think he's a really dynamic director. I'm going to go 3 out of 5 for Blue Beetle.
Thanks, Nick. Pat, what about you?
Very similar to my sort of thoughts on it. I didn't actually realise that it was going to be a straight-to-TV movie originally. So finding that out now makes a lot more sense with a couple of the scenes and how they were done and some of the special effects choices. But, yeah, look, the small characters, the small sort of bit characters with George Lopez as his uncle and his Nana, I think we need a origin story for Nana to find out.
Oh my god! She did, yes.
When that scene happened, I completely forgot about that in the trailer, and I laughed probably harder than anyone else because it was the memory of seeing that for the first time, and then seeing it in the context of the movie was just fantastic.
Yeah. It was brilliant. Yeah. So good.
It was good just to have those extra family dynamics that come into it, and you know every time they were on the screen, they kind of stole it a bit, which was good to have. But yeah, probably a 3 as well. I liked the special effects. I like to see where it's going to go now. I liked the small bits and pieces that tie it back into that DC world, where you know, he spoke about Superman at one stage. He was wearing a Gotham University jumper.
Gotham Law. Yes, Gotham Law, yes.
Yeah. Just those little things that sort of tie it all into the world, which as a fan, I'm more of a DC fan than a Marvel fan when it comes to comics. So it was good to have all those little bits put in there. So it's exciting where it's going to go from here.
Yeah, definitely. For me, I think it's kind of a weird transition. Having no break between The Flash and Blue Beetle, literally like, what, 2 months apart?
Yeah, back to back, basically.
Yeah, so I don't feel like there's been enough of a separation from one hat to the other. That being said, James Gunn isn't producer or executive producer or anything on this. It's still under Walter Hamada, so it's still technically part of that. Part of that, you know, chapter in DC history, and it's still, and I think if you look at it in that context, it's definitely one of the better films from that DC chapter. But it was such a great setup. I think the casting choices for the family were perfect. And while, yeah, the special effects were definitely made for TV, even some
shots still better than Flash.
Some shots of the city were just
god
awful. It still did enough and had, I think, enough of a reason for it to come here in school holidays, because I was initially really annoyed that we had to wait.
Yeah, right. We got it a month after the US.
Yeah, but ooh. I've had people asking me now, like, what should I see school holidays and take my kids to? I'm going to say Blue Beetle.
I think it's fair.
Because yeah. I think well, my 11-year-old enjoy it. Sorry. Oh, did you take your 11-year-old?
No. She was coming. She was coming along to it, and yeah. then, yeah.
Okay.
Was it then? She was an 11-year-old that day, so wasn't going to reward with what she did. So
fair. And I really think.
But that, it was a plan. It was a plan to do it. Yeah.
I think that parents and kids will enjoy this because parents will get a lot out of it, and you know, kids and teens will like it as well. So it's definitely got that appeal, and it's not connected to anything, so you don't need any history of anything to follow what's happening. And I think that really helps this movie as well stand out. I'm saying 3.5 stars.
Nice.
Susan gets half a star. I'm joking.
sorry, do you mean it was 4 and then Susan took half a star away? No, guys, I love Susan Sarandon. It's just poor writing of a villain.
Yeah.
It's not all her fault.
It was definitely we have Susan Sarandon in our movie.
Right.
Then he is our character. Wouldn't Susan Sarandon be great to play this?
Speaking of just putting someone in your movie, I just want to shout out George Lopez. I laughed at everything he said. I thought he had great comedic timing in this film. I mean, I know he's a comedian, so it's given, but I was pissing myself laughing at everything he said.
Yeah, for all the hate he gets, I really enjoy everything that he's done. Everything I've watched him in, I've enjoyed.
I agree. So
it's, he knocked it out of the park again.
Alistair, not on the same page. No. Let's keep that 3.5, 3.5.
If there was half of him, it would have been a lot better. It was just a little too much for me.
No, I can understand that. He's basically like, he caps off every scene, right? Like they always, it's only a cut to him for a punchline, everything. No, I get that.
And I think our cinema didn't react to him at all.
Oh, he got the most laughs in mine.
Was surprising. But
I would say he got the most laughs in mine too, but it was me and two other people.
until he got the most laughs in ours until Nana come on.
Oh man, when she's wielding that gun, it's unreal.
That chain gun,
Even so just good. When she pushes Jaime behind her, I loved that so much.
It was great. It was so good.
Anyway, we could talk about this all night.
We could.
We have to do one more thing before we go. And that is, what is essential in your pop culture this week? Nick, you know this game.
I do indeed.
So, Pat, I don't know if you know this, but basically you have to pick something, a movie, game, TV show, podcast, comic book, anything you like that you're obsessed with this week and want to recommend to people. Nick, what is your essential?
My essential this week is somewhat of a guilty pleasure more than anything. And it's not going to be something that everyone loves, but I can't wait to see it. I haven't watched it yet. I've heard it's quite good. So again, go to novastream.com.au and you can see my interview with the director, Kirk D'Amico. Anyway, stop shamelessly plugging Nick, you selfish bastard. My pop culture essential is in fact the entirety of the Saw franchise. Now, I know this is a divisive thing and you might be wondering, Nick, aren't you supposed to be providing content for the people to enjoy? I somewhat get satisfaction out of these movies because they are as gory as they are gory and violent. They are absolutely absurd and ridiculous with the way they intertwine the films and the twists that pop up at the end. You get the iconic Saw theme song, Hello Zep, you know shit's about to go down. And I've been watching them all in the lead up to Saw X, taking a note out of the Fast X book of movie titles. And going back and rewatching them, I think, having been desensitized to the violence, they are a lot of fun and they are fun to watch with a group of friends. And as we're coming into October, we're halfway through September now, as we're coming into the spooky season, I don't think there's a better thing to do than getting some friends around and having an absolute blast watching one of the most insanely ridiculous yet oddly well-written horror franchises there is. So the Saw franchise is my pop culture essential for this week.
Thank you, Nick. Pat, what about you?
Ooh, that's a tough one. But
it's not Ahsoka Starfield, is it, 5. By the way?
No, I have very divisive thoughts on Starfield. Ahsoka. Ahsoka's on Disney Plus at the moment. We've just had episode 5. and started off with a bang. That was really good, the first two episodes. 3 and 4 were just episodes of nothingness until the very last minute of episode 4. And then we've just had episode 5 this week, and it has absolutely exploded the series. And anyone that's a Star Wars fan or has got a little bit of the Star Wars history and just sort of how deep everything goes, you're going to really enjoy it. And not only that, some of the writing, the cinematography, the sound, everything in episode 5 has just blown every other Star Wars TV show out of the water, really.
Ooh.
Just in that one episode.
That's a big call.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Right.
So, check it out.
Interesting. Well, I must add it to my list. It's on there, but very low down the bottom.
Yeah. It might be one to wait until it's all out.
I'm a binger. I've discovered recently I'm not a week-to-week person.
No.
Sometimes it's easy just to hammer it out, right? Yeah.
And considering that apart from episodes 3 and 4, when you took away the massive credits at the end, which I don't know why they do it, and then the recap and the opening, you've got like 25, 26 minutes of an episode, and it's just not long enough for what they're trying to do. So that's where 3 and 4 just fell on their ass.
Right.
Five's a little bit longer, and, you know, it's 5's at a good length, and it fits everything into it nicely, and it's just wow moment after wow moment.
Yeah, I think I'll definitely wait. So that is Ahsoka on Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mine is a twofer. So another great movie out this week is A Haunting in Venice.
Yes.
And it actually led me to a relatively new game called Agatha Christie's Poirot, the London Case.
Yep.
And fresh out of the movie, after loving it, I jumped straight into this game from Blazing Griffin. It's actually a sequel. There was one last year. I totally did not get on that train or realize it was a thing. However, I started playing it just to see how it was, and 8 hours later, I'm very, very deeply into this, walking around, talking to people, collecting clues, and then going into this mind map thing to connect them all together correctly to solve cases for people. Like, yeah, it's odd, it's really specific, and you really have to be into Agatha Christie and Poirot to probably get into it, because it is very much a strongly narrative-driven game. But yeah, it does have a great voiceover. There's also dubs in French, which I thought was an odd language to have as the only other option. But yeah, it's just providing a lot of fun and definitely a great way to extend your love of Agatha Christie and Poirot, especially if you're seeing A Haunting in Venice this week, which I do definitely recommend as well.
It's so much fun. I mean, like, my introduction to Agatha Christie really was through these Kenneth Branagh movies, so, and Haunting in Venice is a lot of fun.
Best of the three.
Not for me. I just loved how, for me, it's Death on the Nile, because that movie is so unassumingly horny, and I was captivated. So, I mean, it says a lot about me, but as the Pop Culture Essentials audience knows, that's to be expected.
True. All right. Well, that is it for another show. Thanks so much for joining us, Pat.
No, thank you for having me.
And
it's been a while since I've sat down on here.
And you can check out Pat's stuff on novastream.com.au. If you want to check out Pat's gaming stuff, where can they go?
Over to YouTube and check out the Aussie Gamers Experience.
Nice. We will have links to that in the show notes. And young Nicholas, plug your wares?
You can find me on Instagram at NicksFlixFix. That's where you'll find my video reviews. If you head to novastream.com.au, you'll find all my written reviews and interview transcripts. And then the Novastream YouTube page where you can watch the interviews as well.
Fantastic. And you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky, and Threads at Alistair. You can also find the links in the show notes. Make sure you check out our website, novastream.com.au. Enter our competitions, comment on our stuff, show us all the love. And as always, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.